The world's sixth largest economy is one of the most important for our region, from trade to travel to real estate. But the Brazilian economy has been limping along. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Tim Padgett. Brazil's government has been hit by social unrest, and diplomatic relations between Washington and Brasilia have cooled over U.S. surveillance revelations. Coming up on the Sunshine Economy, Brazil and South Florida.
This week was supposed to be the only official state visit by a foreign leader this year to the White House, but Brazil canceled the trip. What's at stake, especially as Brazil is South Florida's number one trading partner?
And how is the Brazilian economy reshaping opportunities here? It's on the Sunshine Economy, and it's next.
Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Tim Padgett. Today, Brazil and South Florida. Thanks for listening.
This week, the national political and economic news was supposed to be all about the U.S. and Brazil. It was going to be the only official state visit by a foreign leader this year to the White House. Tim, the leaders of the sixth and the biggest economies had been scheduled for a series of meetings and events with some pretty high hopes moving into this week for strengthening diplomatic and economic ties, ties that run right through here in South Florida.
But instead, even as Brazil has become Miami's number one foreign trading partner, relations between Washington and Brasilia have been strained over spying. Over the summer, it was revealed that America's National Security Agency had intercepted emails and telephone calls between Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff and state-owned energy giant Petrobras. President Rousseff took her complaints to the United Nations in September.
Recently disclosed information on the activities carried out by a global network of electronic spying has brought about anger and repudiation in vast sectors of public opinion worldwide. In Brazil, the situation was even more serious, since we, Brazil, feature as a target of such an intrusion.
Tim, this spying scandal was really cited as the reason for the Brazilian president to cancel what was supposed to be the White House visit this week, but she's also been under a lot of pressure inside her own country for a lackluster economy.
Well, that's true. After the phenomenal economic boom of the 2000s in Brazil, when you had 40 million essentially added to the middle class, last year the Brazilian economy grew less than 1%. But Brazilians know that the country's problems are much deeper than the economy. So a protest that started last June over bus fare hikes quickly spread to a host of other complaints that are hampering Brazil's development. For example, the government is paying billions of dollars to host this summer's Soccer World Cup, but right. Brazilians will tell you that we're paying first world taxes for essentially third world services. They have threadbare infrastructure, they have one of the most corrupt and dysfunctional political systems in the hemisphere, and especially they have an abysmal educational system.
Education, bad roads, health care, all of those long list of complaints that began with the social unrest that started in Brazil, but it wasn't isolated in Brazil. Brazilians here in Miami gathered in June at Bayfront Park.
And the fact that I live here in Florida, I feel like I have a double responsibility, because I know how the situation in Brazil is. I know the situation that my brothers, sisters, mom, you know, my nephews and nieces live, and I feel more responsible.
That's Deborah Rosen. She lives in Palmetto Bay. Now, she came to South Florida from Brazil more than a decade ago, and she still has family in Rio de Janeiro and in São Paulo, and we're going to hear a little bit more from them later on in the program.
But first, the state visit by Dilma that isn't happening this week, and the missed opportunities for Brazil and South Florida. Lourdes Garcia Navarro is the South America correspondent for NPR. She joined us from São Paulo.
Lourdes, what's at risk for Brazil canceling this week's state visit?
Well, when it happened, there was a very astute editorial in one of the papers here that said nobody ever lost any political points by standing up to the Yankees, the other word for the Americans. And so I think, you know, Dilma Rousseff, the president here, really felt that it wasn't going to cost her politically if she decided not to go to the United States. On the other hand, what we're looking at here is what are the long-term effects of the relationship between the United States and Brazil. You know, American companies here, like Boeing, were hoping to have a huge deal made with the Brazilian Air Force. That doesn't look like it's going to happen. There's been a lot of discussion about, you know, if the NSA has been helping American companies by spying and passing on, you know, important information. So I think, you know, we are going to see continued reverberations. But generally speaking, it's been more of a diplomatic spat than a practical one.
Lourdes, is there also a feeling, though, in Brazil, the acknowledgement that the U.S. just got caught, that perhaps Dilma is being a little naive to think that China, for example, isn't doing the same thing?
I think it's both things. I think certainly everyone understands that everyone spies, and certainly countries spy, and certainly the United States spies. But by the same token, these revelations at the extent of the spying, that it was targeting things like Petrobras and her personal communications, I think really did come as a shock. If you think that the reaction has now been that for the first time the government will be using an encrypted email system, it's surprising that it hasn't had one before now. I think they might have been naive, but at the same time, I think they certainly feel aggrieved.
But what about the longer-term missed opportunities? This is the first and the sixth largest economies. It's the number one trading partner in South Florida internationally. The missed opportunities, the trade opportunities that won't be realized, perhaps, because of the lack of this presidential visit.
Both sides recognized that, and there was a great deal of disappointment that this wasn't going to happen. This was a long time in coming. It was to be the first state visit in decades by a Brazilian leader to the United States. Very few of these visits are allotted every year. It was really an opportunity to show that the relationship between these two big countries had fundamentally shifted. And instead, what we've seen is that they haven't. They see their place in the world very differently than the United States does. And so I think this was a missed opportunity. People do feel that this, the critics of the president, Dilma, say this has shown that perhaps she's not really ready for the world stage because, you know, you don't really decide at the last minute that you're not going to accept a visit like this, which is of such importance. You put the interests of the country ahead of the interests of the short-term political interests. There is, you know, a strong anti-American feeling here, despite the fact that Brazilians are one of the biggest people, you know, the biggest group to travel to the U.S. and shop at the U.S. You know, the United States has a long, bloody history in the region, and it's a history that Latin Americans, and particularly Brazilians, have not forgotten.
NPR's Lourdes Garcia Navarro from Sao Paulo. One of the thousands of families split between South Florida and Brazil is Deborah Rosen and her half-brother Alan D'Angelo. Deborah lives in Palmetto Bay. Alan lives in Rio, where he works as a communications officer on a ship supporting Petrobras as it explores massive new sources of oil in the Atlantic off Brazil's coast.
And we wanted to hear how brother and sister view their economic realities and opportunities in the Brazil and the U.S. from an emerging economy that has hit some bumps as of late and from the American experience. So we met Deborah in her home and spoke with her brother from Rio via Skype.
Alan.
Ah, deixa eu te falar. Se não funcionar com vídeo, a gente faz por voz só, tá bom?
Alan, if I could ask you, how frustrating is it for Brazilians to feel, on the one hand, that so many people, new people, are joining the middle class? The country feels richer, and yet they see that their education is still some of the worst in the hemisphere. Their roads are some of the worst in the hemisphere. Corruption. How are Brazilians dealing with that confusion of being feeling richer on the one hand, but seeing so many of these old problems still lingering in the country?
I think probably most of the people, they have money, they have opportunity to leave Brazil, they're leaving. That's why there's a lot of Brazilians all around the world, in Asia, in Africa, Europe, North America.
Because it's very frustrated when, you know, Brazilians are very generous people in general. And if we see that this tax money will go to the right place, I don't think we'll have a problem with it. The problem is that we know that a lot of money go to the politicians' pockets.
Do you think Brazil is as developed or as close to being developed as the government says it is?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, my point of view of a developed country starts with education. Brazil, it's a shame. I could never consider taking my kids to live in Brazil for 6 months because they will miss so much in education. I mean, there's no place in the way that you live in big cities, and it's awful.
This is a country that you grew up in, that you were educated in up until your mid-20s. You moved to South Florida. Your kids are young kids in elementary school here in Dade County. You wouldn't trust their education with your home country?
No. I don't believe most Brazilians grow up as I did. I came from middle class, but I do think it came from my father, this will of going beyond and go out and search for your place. If I find my place here, I'm not sure. I don't know if I'm going to ever say, I found my own place, because now I feel, a fish out of the water here and there too.
You mean feeling part of the community in South Florida?
No, I do feel part of the community, but my identity, my cultural identity is not the same. But when I go to Brazil now, I don't feel that, I'm part of that identity either. So there's always missing something for me, and I wish Brazil will be that country that I want it to be. And I do things for Brazil, but I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to see that in my generation, I don't know. I don't think so.
How does it make you feel when your sister, who grew up and was educated in Brazil, says that she wouldn't trust the education of your nephews to the country in which you continue to live and find your professional future in?
I have to agree with her, because as soon as I finished high school in Brazil, I have the opportunity to live in Miami, which I went to the community college in Hollywood, Broward Community College, and I graduated. I got my bachelor's degree in international business. And that's why when I come back to Brazil, a lot of doors was open for me. I have a lot of great opportunities, not only because I speak another language besides English and Portuguese and Spanish and Italian, but most of the big companies in Brazil, if they see you have a foreign experience, really, really great for your resume.
Before he started working, it happens to you, before, he was the one that told me that, before he started working for this company, he went to Brazil from here, and he has a very good English, and some companies in Brazil will pick the people that already speak English, because it's easier to teach a career and invest in a university for the person than teach them a language.
Alan, I want to ask you about some of the protests that we saw back earlier this year.
I think it's great for our country because the Brazilian people finally wake up,
I think Brazilians, they feel impotent with the whole situation. We don't know where to do, where to look. We feel happy because now we have a better economical power to buy things, and that's the way I think that the government sees that, we will calm down the people and not let them raise their voices towards the things that really matter, which is health and school, education and housing and all the things that here we have. And the fact that I live here in Florida, I feel like I have a double responsibility, because I know how the situation in Brazil is. I know the situation that my brothers, sisters, mom, my nephews and nieces live, and I feel more responsible.
When Brazil started going to the streets, I was very, very emotional and happy to see that, because for a long time I feel proud to be a Brazilian. Because I was saying that most of the Brazilians, I would say 90% of the Brazilians, they're only proud to be Brazilian in the World Cup because it's one of our passions, to the soccer. So I can tell that all the Brazilians were going to the street, not only in Brazil, but all around the world. And that's made me very, very happy. And hopefully we can change all these things in Brazil. And to not only for me, for my family, but for my daughter, for all this new generation that are coming. And hopefully in the future they can have a good study and good hospitals. They can have a nice car, a nice place to live. And just live well, you know, just enjoy the life the way it's supposed to be, not suffering.
We do have potential. Brazilians in Brazil have a lot of potential.
Two continents, one family, and one hope for their country of Brazil. Still to come on the Sunshine Economy today, how one American division of a Brazilian business giant is building to expand trade between the two countries.
We see ourselves much more as a local firm, enhancing the port and enhancing the airport, I mean, to create trade and to prosper Miami itself.
This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Tim Padgett. Few companies symbolize the economic bonds and sometimes the political strains between Brazil and South Florida more than Odebrecht USA does. And out at the Port of Miami, we saw how those ties are poised to get stronger. The Port of Miami offers one of the most impressive views of the city skyline. But these days, the docks themselves seem to boast their own gleaming towers. These are the 400-foot-tall gantry cranes that have been arriving in recent weeks from China. They can unload cargo from the massive so-called Super Post Panamax ships that will soon be churning through the expanded Panama Canal. The port is being dredged to make it deeper for those vessels, and that in turn has created the need for a new seawall along the wharves. It's a more than $50 million project that's being undertaken by Odebrecht USA. That's the Miami-based subsidiary of Brazilian construction giant Odebrecht, one of the world's largest contractors.
Our project, before we could start anything, we had to relocate.
Alf Newman, Odebrecht USA's project manager, details the job for us. Everything from erecting 4,000 feet of new sheet piles to preserving 185 different coral reefs clinging to the old seawall. Sitting across the table is Newman's boss, CEO Gilberto Neves. A Brazil native, Neves helped found Odebrecht USA here in Miami back in 1991. Since then, it has led the construction of such major sites as the Metro Mover, American Airlines Arena, and the recent Miami International Airport expansion. This is Odebrecht's first Port of Miami project, and it seems fitting that a Brazil-affiliated company is involved in improving the port. That's because Brazil is Miami-Dade County's number one foreign commercial partner. Their bilateral trade was almost $16.5 billion last year.
We see ourselves much more as a local firm, enhancing the port and enhancing the airport, I mean, to create trade and to prosper Miami itself. It's more of a development of Miami-Dade County than developing something in Brazil. We see ourselves as a U.S. firm.
Why is that going local an important part of the Odebrecht corporate strategy?
We do not have executives managing the company from a remote location. You cannot be in São Paulo understanding what their client needs and what's important for their community. It has to be here. We are very client-oriented. So we, and being decentralized, we dedicate to the project a decision-making very close to the clients.
This strategy has come with some criticism because of the close proximity of Odebrecht to the policymakers, the decision-makers, and to some degree government agencies that may be paying as the clients in terms of Odebrecht benefiting at the expense of other local companies. How do you answer those critics?
We don't consider this to be actually a true statement because everything we do is obtained through a competitive process. 100% of the projects that we have in the United States were obtained through a very competitive process. So there was never a favoritism. I wish there was. So it's extremely competitive. This is the most competitive place in the world, and we compete head-to-head with anybody else.
We also asked Neves about the recent Cuba episode when Florida tried to bar Odebrecht USA from any public jobs in the state because its Brazilian parent company is doing work for the island's communist government. Odebrecht USA went to court, and the measure was ruled unconstitutional this year, but it has tested that local relationship that Neves prizes. Many Cuban exile leaders, for example, are protesting Odebrecht USA's $500 million semi-public airport city project near MIA.
How does that affect your thinking in terms of you know, doing business here?
It's a political statement. That's how I consider it. It's a total political statement. The project is through a procurement process, not a political process. We never once stopped procuring any work. None of the subcontractors suffered. To the contrary, there was tremendous support from the local communities and more so the local employees. So it was a political move that became a legal matter to be resolved. It got resolved.
What does the Wharf project allow Odebrecht to do and grow in North America from this Miami footprint?
Well, not only the Panamax, but we are present, for example, right now in Houston, and we were very, very active in New Orleans after Katrina. So we looked at the entire port south of Louisiana as a way to entrench ourselves in the market there. In Houston, we are looking at opportunities also in the Houston Ship Channel.
But this Wharf project is one of those kind of outward expressions of real local economic activity brought on by the continued growth of trade between the U.S. and Brazil, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Given that so much of Odebrecht's infrastructural work in South Florida is tied to commerce and trade, do you worry at all that this sudden cooling of relations between the U.S. and Brazil could have a negative effect?
No, not at all. I think that we are a U.S. firm. Been doing business for 23 years in this country, employed 100 and some thousand employees through directly, and we continue to bid work independently of any policy making that Washington and Brazil have.
As the Brazilian economy has been buffeted lately, have you seen any impact?
No, not at all. And when you talk about Brazil, people talk about the slowness of the economy, but we are extremely busy building up the infrastructure in Brazil.
With annual revenues of $2.5 billion, Odebrecht USA directly employs almost 1,000 people in this country, 157 of them in Florida. Here in Miami, despite the recent bumps, Odebrecht is poised to parlay the seawall construction into more port projects.
Oh, yes. We want to continue to go after projects in the Port of Miami, and including some projects that are not necessarily ports, but in the port island here that had to do with the terminal and also some of the developments that we're talking about.
Any ones in particular that you're thinking of now?
Yes.
Would you like to share any of those with us?
Not necessarily.
From where you stand, how important is the economic relationship between Brazil and South Florida?
As a Brazilian, as an American, or both. As a Miamian?
Both, all three.
I think it's very important for Miami. I wish there was much more trade missions to Brazil from South Florida. I think there's an opportunity that I think can be improved. The mayor of Tampa is going next week to Brazil.
That last comment about Tampa Mayor Bob Buckhorn visiting Brazil was a perhaps not so subtle reminder that current Miami-Dade County Mayor Carlos Jimenez has not taken part in any trade missions to Brazil, nor did his predecessor Carlos Alvarez, nor has Broward County Mayor Kristen Jacobs. Is Carlos Mariaca, president of the Brazilian-American Chamber of Commerce of Florida. Carlos, to be fair, these mayors have gone on trade missions elsewhere in Latin America, but Miami-Dade County is running a $10 billion trade surplus with Brazil. So should they be going to Brazil?
Absolutely. When you take into consideration that bilateral trade between Florida and Brazil has been growing at an average annual rate of 9.8% during the past few years, with the bulk of it going through Miami-Dade, almost 700,000 Brazilians visiting the county, spending approximately $1.5 billion last year, and the fact that the surge in travel has been growing by about 60% over the past 5 years, I would say that they're missing a great opportunity.
We'll be talking with Carlos more a little later in the program.
And you can join the conversation, our live chat online at WLRN.org. You can see a picture, as a matter of fact, of those Super Post Panamax cranes that came in from China and are being installed at the Port of Miami. That's at WLRN.org. Tweet us at WLRN. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Still to come, Brazil comes to the rescue of the South Florida housing market.
90%, I think, of my customers are Brazilians. And yes, they did buy a lot of properties that it was half the price.
This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN, Brazil and South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Tim Padgett.
It wasn't that long ago that South Florida housing market was really a mess, Tim. Prices had collapsed, of course, and mortgage financing had disappeared. The towers of condominiums up and down the beach sat empty, but no longer, thanks in some part to Brazil, and the interest has not slowed.
Upstairs, we have one suite and one bedroom with a private bath and two bedrooms with a bath. And
that's Brazil Geraldo Filho. He's describing the home he's having built now in Aventura. Filho lives in Rio and works as a business consultant. He already owns a condominium in Hollywood, an investment that he made a few years ago with the help of Yuani Lim from Elite International Realty. We spoke with both of them to find out about the Brazilian buyer of South Florida real estate.
We decided to diversify our investments because in Brazil we are doing some not so good. And in U.S., especially in South Florida, we have a very nice price for apartments and houses.
Have you been happy with how it's performed so far?
Yes, I am. The market is going up at this moment, and I think we are making nice profits.
Lim, give us an idea as a realtor working here in South Florida. Is Brazil's story common?
Very. Many of them are coming. They find it cheap compared to Brazil. Not only the price of the real estate, but also when you see the maintenance and the taxes. And especially it's those that do mortgages, the interest rate is very low compared to Brazil.
And Lim, we're not just seeing Brazilians buy houses and apartments here. We're seeing them buy some of the most choice real estate in South Florida. Last year, a Brazilian seller sold a condominium in South Beach to a Brazilian buyer for $6.2 million. Is this sort of thing becoming increasingly common as well?
It's so common that if you go to Sunny Isles, you can see most of those pre-construction. They are very high-end high-rises, and the developers are targeting really the Brazilians and South Americans because, for example, they changed the project a little bit. An example, in the past, it used to be three-bedroom, two-bath because that's normal. But because the Brazilians, they like to have a private restroom, so they have three bedrooms and three baths, or even three and a half baths, because they want to target the Brazilian market. And also they offer services like a butler, because the Brazilians, with money, they don't like to do anything. They just like to come in and enjoy and have a cleaning and a lady and a butler and everybody to serve them.
Brazil, how about for you? When South Floridians will hear you describe real estate here as affordable, I think a lot of people would scratch their heads and say South Florida real estate is awfully expensive for some Americans. So tell us kind of how you're judging that affordability. Is it based solely on your experience in Rio?
Yes, it's based on my experience in Rio. If we compare a brand new house that I'm buying in Aventura Isles as three bedrooms, two and a half baths, if you compare with the similar house in Rio, will cost us four times more than South Florida.
But you're actually buying a pre-construction home, single family home, in addition to
yes.
the rental property that you already own in Hollywood. The home you're
yes.
buying, the home you're building in Aventura is one I imagine that you're not going to rent out, that you're going to live in. Is that right?
Yes, that's our plan. I'm retiring in December, and we think it it should be a good idea to divide our time between Miami and Rio. We would like to spend half of a year in Miami and half of a year in Rio.
Lim, you have mentioned to us that it's not just residential anymore, that Brazilians increasingly are buying business real estate as well. Why are we seeing that shift?
Because they don't want just to have a vacation. They want to live here, and they want to be legal. And so that's, they are looking for business like franchise or opportunities that where they can have a visa.
Right. And is that a big consideration? Brazilians have been pushing, lobbying very hard the U.S. government to ease the restrictions on visas for Brazilians. Is this they feel that investing in businesses here in the United States and South Florida will make it easier then to facilitate the visa process for them?
Yes. They don't want to be legal here. They don't want to have a second type of jobs. They want to perform well here.
They want to put down economic roots here. They want to invest then more, not just in real estate, but in larger businesses.
Yes. So they are looking into business that where they were told they need to invest and then hire some locals, generate business jobs.
Brazil, as a PhD in business, do you see that phenomenon happening here as well?
Yes, yes, very much. And I think it's a trend that we can see other people like myself retiring quite early in the early 50s that has a lot of energy to work again and try to settle a new business in U.S., trying to improve their income, do you know? Then imagine I have an income from Brazil and growing a business in U.S., earning money, and what can I do? Reinvest in U.S., expanding the business, and trying to enlarge our wealth.
Brazil, what are your plans upon retirement and moving to South Florida for half the time?
I'm planning to do my postdoc in Florida International University for 2 years. And afterwards, I think we will launch a software company.
Lim, Brazilians are thought to have saved at least the condo market here in South Florida during the recession. Do you feel like, you yourself took part in saving Miami real estate to a certain degree?
You know, like 90%, I think, of my customers are Brazilians. And yes, they did buy a lot of properties that it was half the price and looking for tenants. And unfortunately, for the local market, I don't have really many buyers, and I have lots of people renting. So it's a good combination because I have the Brazilians with those little condos that they are renting.
Geraldo, does it also make it easier for Brazilians to buy in South Florida, especially if you're from Rio, because Miami tends to perhaps remind Brazilians of Rio de Janeiro, the waterfront, the same sort of cultural environment?
Yes, yes. It's very easy for us. I think, as Brazilians, we feel at home when we walk down in Miami streets, especially by the beach.
Still to come, we talk again with Carlos Mariaca about Brazilians becoming business owners as well as homeowners in South Florida.
This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN, Brazil and South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Tim Padgett.
The Brazilian opportunity, Tim, from a South Floridian's perspective, is just immense. It's great. A huge country, developing economy, a young population looking to join the global middle class.
William Nobrega of Boca Raton knows this. He founded a company called CQS International to help financial firms like insurance companies find customers. He's opening up in Sao Paulo. One reason is because of what he calls, quote, relative ease of entry. Now, in other words, he finds it that it's not too difficult to set up shop in Brazil. But the key here is relative.
Well, it is Brazil. There are hurdles. Getting set up here, I think, is much easier than per se China. Even the legal structure really isn't that difficult. I think the key differentiator, the thing that you have to get your arms around, is the localization.
Now, that means having its services, its website, the customer service, telephone support, all of it, of course, in Portuguese. But while Nobrega has found setting up a business in Brazil to be relatively easy, of course, the World Bank finds it awfully difficult. 119 days to start a business in Brazil here, Tim, putting Brazil between Haiti and Venezuela.
Now, on the flip side, Carlos Mariaca, president of the Brazilian-American Chamber of Commerce of Florida and managing partner of the Miami consulting firm The Center Group, joins us again to talk about investment, but of a different nature. Carlos, we all know that Brazilians are buying South Florida condos, but more and more, they're creating South Florida companies.
That is correct. Besides the large corporate companies like Odebrecht, which was mentioned earlier, and companies like Havaianas, which are known all over the world, there are other smaller and medium-sized companies coming to South Florida. One great example of this is Girafas, the restaurant that opened up about four or five stores in South Florida in the past couple of years. They made the decision to come to the U.S. because after analyzing several different markets throughout the Americas, they identified it as having the greatest return on investment with the greatest growth potential for them. Parts of their analysis included the cost-benefit ratio, you know, which market would offer these greater returns, the window of opportunity for them, because they figured out that if they had success in the U.S., they would most likely have success in other markets, since the U.S. is one of the most competitive markets in the world.
But you mentioned that they also had to revise their model quite significantly when they came into this market.
Absolutely. After analyzing the U.S. market, in Brazil, they are a fast food company. And they have approximately 400 stores throughout Brazil. But when they were analyzing the U.S. market and the size of the fast food market, they just couldn't make the investment to become a fast food competitor. So after the analysis, they looked and identified that the fast casual dining segment with other companies like Chipotle and Panera Bread and Panda Express and that sort of segment of the market was where the greatest potential would be.
The barrier of entry for a Brazilian business or a Brazilian investor to come into the United States and put their money to work to start a business or invest in a business may be lower compared to an American going to Brazil, but what about the competition factor and the scale of success that's necessary for a sustainable kind of business operation?
That is where the greatest difficulty is. I mean, the U.S. is the most competitive market in the world, one of the most mature markets in the world. So unless you can identify the precise niche market that where you can be competitive, it is going to be very hard. And that's not specific to just Brazilian companies. It's everyone in the world wants
worldwide.
To be here.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
But you often go into Brazil as a consultant, Carlos, and you help companies in Brazil develop strategies for coming in here. Can you give us some other examples of firms you've helped?
We're working right now with a company from Florianópolis, which is in Santa Catarina, which is a small technology company that designs software for alarm companies. It's the software that alarm companies monitoring the alarms will use. So when a door opens or whatnot, what shows up on the company side. The south of Brazil has its own little Silicon Valley based out of Florianópolis, and a lot of technology companies from there are trying to get into the U.S.
We were speaking earlier about the lack of high-level political involvement on the local level with some of these Brazilian trade missions that the state of Florida and other agencies have undertaken over the past couple of years. Of course, this presidential visit that was supposed to happen this week was ostensibly a trade mission as well. Will there be economic opportunities that essentially are going to be delayed because of the lack of a visit this week?
I think yes, and one of the greatest, one of the main reasons I would say is one thing that Brazil is lacking right now with the U.S. is an agreement for the e-visa, which is an investor's visa. We have a lot of countries in Latin America that are included in the e-visa, for example, Argentina, Chile, Colombia, Ecuador. there are a few others, but Brazil's not on that list. And if Brazil can manage to get itself on the e-visa list, I think a lot of Brazilians would invest more, especially in South Florida.
And Carlos, what are the, you know, we've seen so many other Latin American companies, companies from other Latin America countries come into this market. They're doing very well. Because Brazilians don't have that connection to the Spanish speaking, you know, community, et cetera, does that make it an impediment for them when they come into this market?
No, I don't think so. It is a little bit when you're looking at the local South Florida market, which is very Spanish-oriented, very Hispanic. But Brazil in itself is a very large company, a country, and it's a very it has its own very competitive market. There are businesses from the southern part of Brazil and the northern part of Brazil that struggle to get into São Paulo. São Paulo in of itself is a very competitive market. So if they can compete in there within Brazilians' difficulties, then competing in the U.S. Becomes a little easier.
Are we going to see as much success with Brazilian companies here and, you know, business investors here as we've seen with real estate investors? Are we going to see a boom, do you think, now in Brazilian business investment?
Well, I would certainly hope so. I don't think it's going to be as big of a boom as the real estate, because I think that's a little bit of a different market. I mean, a lot of people in South America, especially Brazil, would like to have a second home, would like to have like the scenario that the gentleman described where he would like to retire half the year here and half the year there. So that creates a different market. But there are a lot of Brazilian businesses looking at the U.S.
Carlos Mariaca, president of the Brazilian American Chamber of Commerce of Florida, with us right here on the Sunshine Economy. And still to come, from retailing to real estate, the growing language of business in South Florida, Portuguese.
Brazil has become a country for business opportunities.
How do you say that in Portuguese?
Brasil agora é um país para oportunidades de negócios.
This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Tim Padgett. One out of every five American households speaks a second language in addition to English. It's a lot higher, however, here in Florida, upwards of 70% in Miami-Dade. While Spanish is by far the most popular, Portuguese is quickly becoming more influential as a language of commerce, as the Miami Herald's Karen Rundlett tells us.
Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach, all three counties have more people who speak foreign languages than the national average. We already know that here in South Florida, polling places offer ballots in English, Spanish, Creole, and that business is conducted in those three languages. But in recent years, it's Portuguese that has established itself as a new language of commerce. Carolina Pinho moved to South Florida from Brazil more than 20 years ago.
You know, I'm very proud. Maybe 10 years ago, very few people would be interested in learning Portuguese. It wasn't, or it still isn't like an international language, but in South Florida it is.
Pinho runs a school called CCLS that offers Portuguese language classes.
Oi, como vai?
Translation, hello, how are you? Pinho says enrollment in Portuguese classes is up, partly because Brazil is hosting both the World Cup and the Olympics. She has corporate clients like FedEx, Visa, and Univision.
Brazil is preparing for those games, and a lot of people want to do business, sell something, infrastructure, equipment, consulting services.
Are you starting to use your Portuguese already on the job?
Oh, yes, a lot.
Alexandra Estrada is one of Pinho's students. She works in the cruise industry.
Because I have many people coming from Brazil, it's very difficult for me to communicate with them in English. Sometimes they don't know English, or they feel more comfortable talking in Portuguese.
Not only do locals want to sell their services in Brazil, they want to sell their products to Brazilians visiting South Florida. That's a suitcase rolling through Sawgrass Mills Mall.
It's very easy to find a Brazilian shopper. They are everywhere, and they have huge bags of shopping merchandise.
Despite the fact that Brazil's economy has cooled a bit, it's still customary for Brazilian tourists to visit Sawgrass, fill suitcases with purchases, and head right to the airport. Look at the mall's website. There's a tab for Portuguese customers. The largest Brazilian community in the Tri-County area lives between Deerfield and Pompano Beach. But 2 years ago, Brazilians scooped up Miami condos in record numbers. The real, Brazil's currency, was particularly strong and prices were attractive. Back home, Brazilians would have to pay three times the price for a comparable home. And today, more towers are being built in Miami with Brazilian clients in mind. Elizabeth Cooper Garcia is a realtor who uses some of the Portuguese she picked up in high school with her Brazilian clients.
They would speak to me half in Spanish, and I would understand, and I would throw in a Portuguese word.
She says buying a condo leads to more shopping.
The property gets furnished, you know, so they have to go to a furniture store. They need to buy linens, pots, pans, you know, if they're going to be using the place.
Ultimately, students of Portuguese want to learn the language for one of three reasons: loving the language, loving someone from Brazil, or loving money.
Brazil has become a country for business opportunities.
How do you say that in Portuguese?
Brasil agora é país para oportunidades de negócios.
And in a local economy that's still sputtering, many businesses are learning to say hello.
Oi.
To good customers.
Após escolher o modelo que me interessava, o vendedor garantiu-me que a
Karen, it really sounds like the bottom line for local business professionals, entrepreneurs, that they're studying Portuguese to sell directly to Brazilians, right?
Absolutely, Tom, because Brazilians are still buying. And yes, the real did slide in value in the last year, but Brazilians will tell you their country is still so expensive when you compare it to the U.S. A cheese pizza. Let's talk about a cheese pizza. In Sao Paulo, that's $30. Here, it's $10. And by the way, Brazil is Miami International Airport's top international market.
You know, it's interesting, Tim, we heard that same thing from the real estate investor about how much cheaper Miami real estate is compared to Rio. Pizza is also cheaper.
But we're also seeing perhaps more business investment now from Brazilians. Karen, can you give us an example of an enterprise that's doing a thriving business here in Miami now?
I'm going to point to a store called Artefacto. It has two locations right now, and one is coming eventually to Doral. And basically, that's boutique, high-end, kind of modern furniture. They've even partnered with the malls to create events. And they're from Brazil and came here. And after Brazilians buy these condos, a lot of the wealthier ones do furnish from this store.
There used to be two languages for business in South Florida, English and Spanish. Are you essentially hearing, Karen, that Portuguese is quickly becoming the third language of business, of commerce?
Yes. What happened to me was I would talk to business professors, economists, realtors all the time, and I kept hearing this over and over. I kept hearing, it's not enough to know English and Spanish anymore. Portuguese is what's going to give you an edge here. And that's because they're hearing about these big deals being done in business. So I think it is going to give you a competitive advantage if you're able to speak Portuguese and if you're able to cater to that clientele.
Well, Karen, muito obrigado.
De nada. Did I say that correctly?
You did, Karen. And that brings us to the subject that if you're going to the Soccer World Cup, you may want to learn a lot of Portuguese. But Tom, that also brings us to the subject, at least more immediately, that's on everyone's mind about Brazil. Will it be ready to host that major event this summer?
You talk to Americans that are traveling to Brazil on business. You talk to Brazilians that are looking to invest in South Florida. At some point, every conversation, Tim, that we had winds up mentioning the World Cup in 2014 in Brazil. It's the first time Brazil is going to be hosting this international affair since 1950. It's a much different country today than it was, of course, more than a half century ago.
But will the roads, the hotels, and the airports be ready to handle the influx?
Absolutely. And you've got that coming up. And then, of course, just 2 years later, the Summer Games, the Summer Olympics, the globe continues to look toward Brazil.
Which means all of those things that Brazilians were protesting about over this summer better get fixed.
That's Tim Padgett. I'm Tom Hudson. And for generations, soccer has brought Brazilians together from all income levels. It has also brought the world to Brazil. And the beautiful game has brought Brazil to the global stage. This is the Sunshine Economy, Brazil and South Florida on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. For Tim Padgett, thanks for listening. Música.